بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الأطيبين الأنجبين بهم نتولى ومن أعدائهم نتبرأ إلى الله اللهم كن لوليك الحجة ابن الحسن صلواتك عليه وعلى آبائه في هذه الساعة وفي كل ساعة وليا وحافظا وقائدا وناصرا ودليلا وعينا حتى تسكنه أرضك توعا وتمتعه فيها طويلا Among the greatest creations of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala is the Akhirah, the hereafter, and there it's the heaven and the hell. Now, every one of us is heading towards the Akhirah, and the journey, it starts with the giving away of the soul that has been given to us as a trust, as an amana. And that has to be given back to the existence of Allah, Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. And that is a tough time that each one of us has to face. And again, a lesson to myself first, to you brothers and sisters, a reminder. And may Allah ease this journey, and that is the departure from this world to the hereafter, to each one of us. And may he never distance us from his mercy, from Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, and from Quran in those desperate moments. So the journey starts with death. And it was said the other day that sometimes the death, it's an easy death, and sometimes it is painful. And once a person departs and enters into his grave, which is the first station, there too the Prophet says that the pressure that a person would see in the grave, it's for sure for everyone. But there are certain things, certain actions which a person does throughout his life which ease the pressure, or which release the pressure, or which remove the pressure that a person would see in his grave, which is known as Fishar al-Qabr, known as Dhaqtatul Qabr, etc. And in the grave, when a person is laid, the first angel to enter, he's known as Roman Fattan al-Qubur. In the Psalms of Islam, the Sahif al-Sajjadiyya, I believe the third or the seventh dua that we have, it is this dua of our fourth Imam to all the angels of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. And there Imam, he starts sending salutations to each one of them and comes to this angel known as Rumana Fattan al-Qubur. And when the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam was inquired, who is Roman? Or who is Rumana Fattan al-Qubur, and what is the duty assigned to him? He says, when a person is laid into his grave and his loved ones, they all go away, he checks the marhum in, he checks him in. And then after checking him in to the barzakh, that is in his grave or in the hereafter, he gives the performance report of this person who has died to Munkir and Nakir. And based upon the performance of the deceased, Munkir and Nakir, they appear either in a good form or in a bad form. And then the Prophet, he says that when this Roman enters the grave of this deceased, he would tell him to write whatsoever he had done throughout his life. That is, from the day he was born till the day he dies. And he would say that, how do I write? I do not have anything to write. And then he will be instructed to write with his finger as the pen, and his shroud, his kafan, as the paper, and his saliva as the ink. And he would write. Initially he wouldn't write. And then when he sees the lash and the whip in the hands of Roman, he would start to register and write all the good deeds that he had performed, first of all. And once he has recorded them, then he would stop. Again, he would be instructed to write. And then he is ashamed. And then the Roman says, that, "Are you ashamed now? Where were you? Why were you not ashamed then, when the communications of Allah were sent to you, when you were told to be obedient, you sinned, you did wrong, right?" And again he lifts his whip. To hit him, he starts writing. Once he has done the complete performance report, he says to seal it. He says, "How do I seal?" Says again, "Your finger as your seal, your saliva as the ink, seal it." And once that is sealed, it's hung, that tablet on which the performance of this individual was done throughout his life is hung into his neck until the day of judgment. Based upon the performance of that individual, Munkir and Nakir, the two angels, they enter into the grave, and there the questioning starts. Among the things that help in this difficult path ahead are attachments and acquaintances that we have with everything which Allah has told us to reduce the distance between us and Him. Among them is Dua Adila. Among them is Ziyarat Ali Yasin. Among them are all of these Duas and Ziyarat that we have. And Ziyarat Ali Yasin, the reason for mentioning that is, if you look into it, the reminders of our faith, they have been mentioned in that Dua, which is after Ziyarat Ali Yasin, that death is haq, dying is haq, the questioning in the grave is haq, and then raising from the grave is haq, the book is haq, all these a'imma, the prophets, they have been mentioned, and these reminders are important for us, and we need to get reminded every day by ourselves. And then when we are reminded, when a person is giving away his life, it would be easier for him to grasp and to understand what it is said. So dua adila is the dua which is recited normally by the person who is dying or who has died, is to be recited again while we are alive. So that was a reminder. And again, things that help in this journey, it's doing good to parents. Now, horrendous crimes we see in our community. Now, by crimes, it doesn't mean that the person takes a gun and shoots someone down. No, that is something which is normal over here. Or mugging someone, all these things are there. Sins that Allah has said to not to be done, to be abstained. When a person does that, a sin, it takes a form. It has a form of its own. It has an appearance of its own. As a good deed a person does, that too has an appearance of its own. Doing good to parents, riwayat, amazing effects it has. Says that a person's life would be increased by 30 years. And someone who does bad to parents is rude to them. No matter how bad a parent is, no matter how bad a father is, no matter what a mother has done to the child, you be good to them. That is the teaching. Although it's tough. And as a result of that, says that an increase of 30 years will be given to you in your lifespan as a result of that good you do to them. Silatul rahim taqi maytat as-su wa tuhawwinu al-hisab. All these tragic deaths that we see, depression, stress, all these are as a result of all these sins that we do in our livelihood. So it is as such that whatever the performance is, it turns back to us. The good again turns back to us, the bad again turns back to us. As a result of which, Ma'asum, he says that that grave which we are preparing for ourselves, it is either hufratun min hufarin niran aw rawdatun min riyad al-jannah. It's either a hole, a pit that we are preparing, a pit of fire, or it's either a part of the heaven which is over there, which we are preparing. So that hell and heaven, we are preparing that in our own life. So, sins, crimes or indecencies that we do to ourselves, to our parents, to our relatives, to our friends, to our foes, all of that turns back to bima'rifati, that is lack of knowledge, lack of understanding, lack of awareness. It's so beautiful. Prophet Sulaiman, he was asked from Allah, Sulaiman, what do you want? Do you want wealth? Do you want knowledge? Or do you want awareness? He says, give me awareness. Oh, do you want wealth? Do you want rule? Or do you want awareness? Prophet Sulaiman says, give me ma'rifah, give me awareness. Allah says, now that you want awareness, I'll give you ilm and also I will give you rule. Because someone who has this ma'rifah, who is knowledgeable, who knows what right and wrong is, he will not loot, he will not plunder. And he will, even if the rule is given to him, he will use it in a good way. The same thing is with Prophet Adam. Allah, when he created him, the first thing he does that he teaches him. وَعَلَّمَ الْآدَمَ وَعَلَّمَ آدَمَ الْأَسْمَى. That the first thing he does, he teaches him. That is, that level of awareness is increased. So again, the same thing applies to us. That if we want to live good in this society and prepare a good end for us, prepare a good grave for ourselves, that ma'rifah has to be increased. That understanding has to be increased. The good that we do has to be upgraded. The bad that we do has to be put aside. And among them are especially good to parents, that has a very important effect in our life. Sustenance increases. There's a downpour of sustenance as a result of that good that we do to our parents. Now, Salman, a companion of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, he comes to Rasulullah and says that, I don't know, I'm so much depressed, so much stressed out. And I don't see a reason for that. Why am I so much upset? Rasulullah says, come on, get up. Let's go to the graveyard. They come to the graveyard together. And there Rasulullah says that, recite a Fatiha for them. They recite and they come back. He says, I'm relieved now. Rasulullah said, you went to the graveyard, you performed a Fatiha for your marhumin, they prayed for you. As a result of that, you were released. That pressure, that stress you were in, the problems you were facing, they are eased. A parent, if they have passed away, if you do good to them by all these recitals, it's not only Fatiha, it's not only bringing Tabarruk to a mosque, that's all, it's just a fraction. It's any good. If you do some good in the community, which has nothing to do with the mosque also, they get the reward, they get the sawab, no matter what it is. Do something good and say to Allah that, Allah, this is being done on behalf of them. They get the sawab and also you get. You don't need to put it on a paper and then bring it over here and then for them to be recited. It's all wireless. It just gets to them immediately without any connection. So, any good done and sent to them, they benefit, and as a return, you benefit in this dunya. That is the teaching of Islam. And if the parents are alive, although you couldn't serve them, but you are good to them, we are good to them, the prayers of a mother, the prayers of a father, they hit the target, they hit the bonus. Among the prayers that are never declined are prayers of children to their parents, prayers of parents to their children. They have a miraculous effect. So these are just a bit some reminders that are to be mentioned on a night like tonight, because riwayat, they say that marhumin, they come to us who are alive in the form of birds, and they wait that, is there someone who could give some khairat to us, as a result of which our end over there, our barzakh, our hereafter can be better. That's one. And again, we talked a bit about prayers, importance of prayers. One of the things that helps our prayers to be of a better quality is that we just don't start it with Takbiratul Ihram and finish with Allahu Akbar and then get up and go away. Like a plane which especially after this 9/11, you've got all these security checks so that it's all sterile and nothing gets into there. And the plane, it takes its time on the runway, in the airport, and then ascends. and then descends, and then again after taxiing and parking. That's a long procedure. The prayer is also the same. Start your prayer with an adhan, with an iqamat. The riwayat, it says that someone who starts his prayers with an adhan and an iqamah, two sufuf of angels, that is two rows of angels, they pray with you, behind you, and the length of the row of these angels, it starts from the east to the west. Now, east to the west of this earth, or east to the west of the creation of Allah, it's unknown. So two rows of angels behind you for one adhan and one iqamat just being said for one prayer. And again, if just an iqamat is said, it's only that one row of angel who will be behind us. So again, now these angels, now all these, that reward, it's to improve and to upgrade and uplift the prayer that we offer. The other thing is that to offer the prayers on a mohr, a sajdagah, and that is the clay of Karbala, it's highly recommended. And the riwayat, they say that someone who offers his sajda, performs his sajda on that clay of Karbala, when he bows down and puts his forehead onto that clay, it enlightens the seven layers of the earth. Just one sajda done on that clay of Karbala. Says not only that, it enlightens the seven layers in the skies just for that one sajda. And if someone was to perform sajdas on the clay of Karbala in the right mood, in the right manner, then what a great spiritual uplift a person would get as a result of those little tips that we have to observe and to perform these prayers in a better way. There is a hadith from our sixth Imam, Sadiq alayhi salatu wassalam. He says that, Wallah ya Aba Khalid, addressing to Aba Khalid, says, by God, ya Aba Khalid, la yuhibbuna abdun, that one would not love us. وَلَا يَتَوَلَّانَا, nor does he associate with us, befriend with us. حَتَّى يُتَهِّرَ اللَّهُ قَلْبَهُ, but that Allah will purify his heart. So someone who loves Ahlul Bayt, who associates with them, who befriends with them, the immediate effect which Imam says after swearing that by God, by Allah, Allah will purify him. So when we associate with them, we come to them, we get purified. But sometimes we are good, we get good purification, sometimes we are bad. How is that? A mother, a father, when they want to wash their child, their baby, they take him to the bathroom. Sometimes this baby is so nasty, he's so bad, or he cries so much, that halfway in the bathroom, she has to bring her out. The mother wants to purify, wants to clean, but the baby is not ready. Sometimes babies are so good, they would stay with the mother in the bath until she washes them, dries them, and brings them out. So we also, similar to them, that sometimes we are so good that we get purified like that baby who is good. Sometimes we are bad, or we make so much of a mess and noise that we come out without getting purified. But that purification process is available for everyone. Now, how much a person gets purified, it's based upon us, our ma'rifah, and our own awareness. So, we love them, there's an effect that they also love us. And it is not as such that we have this heart that Allah has given to us. We can fill just one thing in there, either the love of God or the love of His enemies, one of the two. We can't have together. You don't put honey and, for example, something bitter in one glass. They have to be separate. The same thing is with this heart. This heart can hold the love of either Allah or Shaitan, one of the two. So God, He wants us to be purified, but we don't accept. Now again, the source of all positive and negative changes in an individual in both this dunya and the akhirah, it's the heart. And for that reason, Quran in Surah Al-Baqarah says that fi qulubihim marad, that some of these hearts, they are sick, they are ill, they don't accept the communications of Allah at all. Some hearts accept quickly. So a person can never bow before God when he wants it himself. Submit to God, he has to put away everything that increases the distance between him and his God. Only then can he submit to God. Only then can he bow down in sajda before God. And again, one of the other reminders that I have for tonight, it's to the sisters. And that is the teaching that we have. قُلْ يَا أَيُّهَا النَّبِيِّ قُلْ لِأَزْوَاجِكَ وَبَنَاتِكَ وَنِسَاءِ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ يُدْنِينَ عَلَيْهِنَّ مِنْ جَلَابِيبِهِنَّ. It's the issue of how they dress, how they come out in the open, how they come out of their houses. So they should come out in a way that they are not recognized. In a way, their looks, their beauty, whether or not they are ugly or beautiful, it shouldn't be known. What their size is, what their height is, now all this is stuff today. But the teaching is that should come out in an elegant way, in a way that they do not attract others. Now, just look at the hijab or the covering which Hazrat Zahra alayhi salam has. In addition to the clothing which she has, the hijab which she has, whether it's hot or cold, when she comes out of her house, a few women, four or five from Bani Hashim, they surround her so that she is not seen, so that no one finds out that she is coming, she is in the streets. Or even when she comes to the mosque, again there is a hijab, there is a curtain, and that is how the chastity and the cover and the hijab of her is observed. Or for example, if you look into the biography of Hazrat Zainab alayhi salam, Yahya Mazani, he says that I was her neighbor for 7 years. Never did I see her, nor I ever found out what her height was, what her size was, how she looked. Never, for 7 years. And again, when she was brought to Sham in the court of Ibn Ziyad, there again, she instructs the women that it should that no one finds out who she is. Now, if someone looked at her, it's the look of Ali, and they would immediately recognize she is the daughter of Amir al-Mu'mineen. But the women over there present, they surround her, and that is why you find that Yazid, he inquires and says that man hadhihi al-mutanakkira, that who is this unknown woman that she was surrounded by. Or Abu Basir, in a report from our sixth Imam Sadiq alayhi salatu wassalam, comes to her and says that I want to learn deen, fiqh, religion from you. Abu Basir says, okay. And in a public place, there is a curtain. Abu Basir sits on one side, the lady sits on the other side, and there he teaches her. And it so happens that once he says something and the lady, she starts laughing. Imam Sadiq, he is informed of this incident. He says, stop that at once. From now on, I will not allow you to have such conversation or to hold such meetings. So the issue is so strict that there has to be a total segregation between men and women, boys and girls. So within the framework and the limits that Allah has set, we just move within that framework, within those limits. Because it is tough, it is risky. And the moment when the boy and the girl, or a man and a woman who are not mahram to each other, are present in a place, the third one to enter there is shaitan. The third one is shaitan. And the task assigned to him is that indecency, in a way that the dunya and the akhirat of both is shaken and shattered. And again, if you look into Yazid and how his performance was, many a times it is said that if we don't learn from Ma'asumeen, from Ahlul Bayt, at least we should learn from Yazid. What is that? He has a maid. Now on that day when in the courts of Yazid, the head of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein was in that vessel, in that tasht, and that mal'oon seated on his throne was disrespecting the head and the teeth of Abu Abdullah with that stick which he has in his hand. The maid, she was asleep. And there she says, she sees Hazrat Zahra alayhi salam in her dream that she is so much in pain, so much disturbed by the performance of Yazid that he is disrespecting, insulting the teeth of Abu Abdullah. And upon the crying of Hazrat Zahra, this maid of Yazid, she is shaken, she wakes up, runs into the courts of Yazid without a head cover. And then, Yazid, what are you doing? This is what I saw. Yazid says to this maid, go in, how dare you came out in the open without a head cover? Again, this question may come to your mind that why do we call Imam Hussein alayhi salam as Abu Abdullah? In Arabic, we have kunya, which means, and when you have a child, if for example his name is Abdullah, the father will be known as Abu Abdullah, or the mother would be known as Abdullah. So that kunya in Arabic, it's either Ab or based upon the son or the daughter he has, or sometimes it's a title that is given in the community. For example, once when Amir al-Mu'mineen was performing his prayers and he was in sajda, when he got up and all that dust was on his head and face, Rasulullah was passing by, he says, you look so beautiful that way, Ya Abu Turab. So the title Abu Turab was given. Turab in Arabic means dust, means sand. Given to Amir al-Mu'mineen by the Prophet. Doesn't mean that he had a boy, he had a son which was named Turab. The same thing is with Abu Abdullah. Imam, he doesn't have a son named Abdullah, but in a way he is the father of the creation, father of the servants of Allah. Or he has served in a way that he was given that title of Abu Abdullah by the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. And says that, as he says that, Husaynun minni wa ana min Husayn. Now, the first to be created in this grand creation of Allah is Rasulullah. He created him first. And then when Rasulullah says that, Husaynun minni wa ana min Husayn, that Husayn is from me and I am from Husayn, doesn't want to say that he is his offspring. He wants to say that he is from me, part of me. When Rasulullah is the father of the creation, father of the nation, and he says that Husaynun minni wa ana min Husayn, Husayn is from me and I am from Husayn, so he too in a sense is the father of this creation, and that is why he is known as Abu Abdullah. And again, with reference to Abu Abdullah, the rank which he possesses, and the shafaat which he will do. Now most of these things were mentioned over here in various and different angles. And it is not as such that they contradict each other, whatever was said was right. But based upon the level of understanding of every individual, he grasps a bit, he understands a bit. And the more these things are said, the more questions and doubts a person may be having in his mind, they are removed and they are eased. Someone comes to Rasulullah and says that, why are you named as Abu al-Qasim? Why are you Abu al-Qasim? He said, I had a son called Qasim, as a result of which I was known as Abu al-Qasim. I'm known as Abu al-Qasim. He says, yes, everyone knows that and I also know that. If you think that I can understand more than that, why are you known as Abu al-Qasim? In reply, he says that, you know Ali? He says, yes. He says, I raised him. I educated him, so as if I am his father. He says, yes. And then he says that Ali, he is Qasimun Nari wal Jannah. He is the distributor of the hell and the heaven. He says, yes. He says, if Ali could be Qasimun Nari wal Jannah, I am Abu al-Qasim. I am the father of. So that's how Based upon the level of understanding of every individual, things are said. And again, when we talked so loud about the greatness of Abu Abdullah, which is truly great, and again when we talk so loud about Qabr and on the punishments, the rewards that will be, a person will see, all that is haqq. But when we, it shouldn't be as such that we just take the beauty of Imam and have all hope in it without any performance in us. That is bad. That is a pick and choose religion, and that is never accepted. He says, and there is a hadith, that people who are of that nature, that they pick and choose certain things, or a designer made Islam, which they find it easy going, they do it and accept it in that way. Rasulullah says that, I fear for them, for their scary end. It is not guaranteed that someone who is of that nature, it's not guaranteed he will have a good end. Because the goodness, the good things that we do, the teachings that we abide by, that we follow, they help us in passing this channel and passing this zone through death. And the stronger the performance of a person is, the more chances of passing and crossing that path it would be. And the lesser the performance, the tougher it would be. As it was mentioned the other day from Manazil al-Akhirah, written by Marhum al-Qummi, that Alim, to one of his most learned students, Alam, who was Fudail, he says that when he was giving away his life, the teacher comes by his bedside and says, say la ilaha illallah. Now the most learned student says, makes a mockery over there and says, I hate to say that, aliyadu billah. And he's amazed that how come this guy was the best student of mine, the most learned of mine. And how come when I say that simple recital, the formula to enter Islam, la ilaha illallah, and that's how he mocks. And he dies. A few days later, a communication is created and he sees his student. Says, what was that? When I was by your bedside and I said to you, say la ilaha illallah, you did not. He said that I had three problems in me, as a result of which I couldn't utter that recital of la ilaha illallah. First of all, gossip. Second of all, I was jealous. I had jealousy in me. And then says that, the third, I was ill and the doctor had told me to have a few sips of wine every night, and I took that as a medication. As a result of that, I couldn't say that la ilaha illallah. So sins that we do in this world, they have an immediate effect in our own performance report, as a result of which we cannot say the basic recitals when we need to say them. So, that pick and choose form of religion, it's dangerous. Whatever has been said to us, we do. Whatever has been said to us not to do, not to do. Or that in Surah Al-Hadid says, مَا آتَاكُمُ الرَّسُولُ فَخُذُوهُ وَمَا نَهَاكُمْ عَنْهُ فَانْتَهُ. Whatsoever the Prophet has said to you, do, do. What he has said, don't do, don't do. It's only these two things, nothing else to do. And based upon this, the Prophet, he says that there is a criteria that will be set for a person to enter the hereafter, and that would be his identity. If he possesses that criteria, that ID card of his will be issued, and an entrance permit into Mahshar will be granted to him. What is that ID? He says that man mata wa lam ya'rif imam zamanihi mata meetatan jahiliyya. Whosoever dies not knowing the imam of time has died a death of ignorance. It seems to be a bit tough, but we'll blend it into easy words. During the time of Prophet Isa, ala nabiyyina wa alayhi wa alayhi salatu wa salam, two brothers, one of them very pious, very religious in the community, and the other one just an ordinary person. Now these two brothers were afflicted with the same type of bala, affliction. For example, the roof fell down on both of them. Or for example, a loss sustained by both of them exactly of the same type. And the two, they prayed to God for that problem to be eased. The problem of that regular brother was sorted out immediately. Whatever he asked God was given to him. The religious, the pious brother, he just asked and knocked the door of God for days, 2 days, 3 days, nothing happened. He comes to Prophet Isa and says that, "You know me. I am better than my brother. My worship, my performance, I am more pious, more religious. Same type of affliction on both of us. His was granted, mine is not. I am better than him. Why is that?" He says, "I don't know. I don't have your performance report. I don't have your files. I'll have to ask Allah and to see what he says." Wahy is revealed upon Prophet Isa. Says that the reason for the regular brother's du'as being accepted quicker is that he has a good heart. The pious one has a bad heart. And then he says that the reason for having that bad heart is that he doesn't accept you as the wali. Although Prophet Musa has, he accepts Prophet Musa. He doesn't accept you. So that's why Allah has not accepted his du'a. So that there says that he knew the imam of his time, which is Isa, his du'a is accepted. And today it's the same thing. We have to know who the imam of time is. As a result of that, a person could benefit more. Now with reference to Quran, when we say that imam is in ghaibat, he is in hiding in or in occultation, it means that we are not benefiting as we can benefit when he is present. The same thing is with Quran. When the imam is in occultation, Quran also is in occultation. If we don't benefit from the imam with full force, we don't benefit from Quran also. The same thing is over here. That if someone knows the imam of time, he benefits. He benefits from every aspect. Now if someone who has a bad heart, who has a bad performance or whatsoever, the imam has said, a few things are being done, most of the things are not being done. Or pick and choose. If that is the case, what guarantee do we have that they will accept us? So they see the heart. Again, if you look into the performance of Rasulullah, for 23 years he was propagating, serving Allah. 23 years, he says, inform the people about Salat, he did it. Inform them about fast, he did. Inform them about Hajj, he did. Whatsoever Allah told him, he did. But never, never on not even one occasion did he say that, "Ya Rasulullah, if you don't inform the people about Salat, you've lost your job, I'll sack you." Never. But when it came to the day of Ghadir, he says that if you don't inform the people of this incident, of this event, whatsoever you've done, all of that will be null and void, as if everything in vain. So that concept of imamat plays a very important part. And when it comes to introducing the Ahlul Bayt or his own household, he doesn't say, "That's my son, that's my daughter." He look into Ziyarat Jama'at al-Kabira, a beautiful ziyarat, quoted, reported from our tent. Imam, he says that, "Assalamu alayka ya ahla baytin nubuwa, the household of prophethood, wa mawdha ar-risala, and the spot wherein the prophecy is sent, wa mukhtalaf al-malaika, that household wherein the angels they frequent, وَمَهْبِتَ الْوَحْيِ, wherein the wahy is revealed, وَمَعْدِنَ الرَّحْمَةِ, and the source of mercy, source of rahmah, وَخُزَّانَ الْعِلْمِ, so on and so forth until the end of that ziyarat. A beautiful ziyarat. It's a whole lesson of imamats. If someone understood this ziyarat al-jami'ah, the concept of imamat for him, it's clear. The same thing is with du'a nutbah. Now these du'as, these ziyarat, they need to be introduced. We need to get more acquainted with them so that we understand what Ma'asumeen have said, what the whole concept of imamat is. Tomorrow is Friday, and Friday it's the day of Dua Nujba. If you get some time, just look into the translation of this Dua. It won't take much of your time, maybe 20 or 15 minutes. And see how painfully, this whole concept of imamat has been introduced in this dua. And inshallah, very soon you'll have the video of dua Nutba in the next 2-3 days, or might be tomorrow. And that is how imam explains to you the concept of imamat, how it was deprived from Amirul Mu'mineen, and this time which we are waiting for the imam, the qualities of the imam, and how we plead and cry for the imam, for him to arrive. Nutba means crying, means lamenting. So that is the name of the dua. So by the command of God, he informs, the Prophet informs, that after him, it's Amirul Mu'mineen who will be the imam, and then says that, if you deliver that message, وَاللَّهُ يَعْسِمُكَ مِنَ النَّاسِ, Allah will protect you from the people. Salawatun. And again, Rasulullah, he is all mercy, rahmatun lil alameen. Never did he curse anyone. But on this occasion, he has this dua when he curses. What does he say? When he appoints Amirul Mu'mineen as his successor, Rasul, who is rahmatun lil alameen, who never has uttered such phrases, says, Allahumma waliwan wala wa'adi man aada, that whoever is a friend of his, be a friend of his. And whoever hates him, hate him. Wansur man nasara, whosoever helps him, assists him, help him. Wakhdul man khadala, whosoever defames him, defame that person again. So these words were seen and uttered by Rasulullah for the first time, again, because the task assigned to him, it's so strong that has to be uttered in that strong way. And the same thing can be seen with Allah, although he is Arhamur Rahimeen, but at times he is strong. He has those harsh words. He said, "Ashadul Mu'aqibina fi mawdhi'in nakali wa naqima," that we read in Dua Iftitah, that when he is all merciful, but when it comes to certain occasions, he is strong before his enemies. Ashadul Mu'aqibin, be tough. And that is the ruling to us, that when it comes to someone who is an enemy of God, no, You can't be united with him. You can't be with him. There has to be a total segregation, a total separation with the enemy of God. You have to be against him. You have to stand against him. You can't be with him. And again, when it comes to being with the enemies, his wrath is tough. When it comes to friends, he is so friendly. Kalimullah, Prophet Musa, he is among the most patient, the loving prophets of Allah, who has all that love to his nation. When he is sent, when he is away from his nation for 40 days for worship, and when he comes back, and he sees that the nation, they have worshipped, they have bowed down before a calf, before a cow. What does he do? Torah that was revealed upon him. Torah is the book. It's like the Quran we have. So that book has to be kept and placed on one's head with all that respect. When he sees that the nation has bowed down before a cow, what does he do? He throws away that Torah. He's in rage. And then what does he do? He holds the neck of his brother Harun and is sharp on him. He says, what shall I do? What could I have done? It's the nation. They have stood against God. They have bowed down before. And immediately, what does Prophet Musa do? He comes and complains to God that, Rabbi, inni la amliku illa nafsi wa akhi fafruq baynana wa bayna al-qawmi fasiqeen. That God, I own only myself and my brother and nothing more. I don't have abilities more than myself and my brother. So, separate me from my nation because of their bad performance. If God forbid, on the Day of Judgment, Rasulullah comes and says the same word, says that, La amliku, that I can't do anything for them, I can't help them. It's me and my brother only, I have the power on. separate me from my nation, then what are we going to do? What is our end going to be? So the performance of the nation of Musa over there was bad. As a result of that, he says, God, separate me from my nation. So, من مات ولم يعرف إمام زمانه مات ميتة جاهلية. Whosoever dies not knowing the Imam of time has died a death of ignorance. But we have a lot of hope in Rasulullah. We have a lot of hope in Aba Abdullah al-Hussein. And in al-Hussein, Misbah al-Huda wa Safinatun Najat, that he is the torch of guidance and is the ark of salvation, the ship of salvation. And we have a lot of hope in these majalis, a lot of hope in these tears that are shed for him. And we will, inshallah, find salvation. The shortcomings, the performance which is wrong in us, definitely it's much better than many of these Muslims that are present over here. 1 billion Muslims present, and we are just a few who mourn from the first day until for so many days. For a month, sometimes 2 months and 10 days, we mourn for Aba Abdullah. So with all that attachment, we have hope in him. Now compare ourselves to those so-called who enjoy or who hold festivals on the 1st of Muharram, who get married on the 10th of Muharram. We are better than them. So we have a lot of hope with Aba Abdullah, and definitely, inshallah, he also will have a special eye on us. So, there is a conversation between Allah and Prophet Musa. There he says that Musa, a person comes to Prophet Musa and says that I've done a lot of crimes, a lot of sins. And Prophet Musa, he was going towards Mount Tur to have a meeting with Allah. Now what type of a meeting was that, we don't know. Well, in any case, he was going to Mount Tur, and this person says that now that you are going to Allah, to meet him, to meet God, mediate and ask him to forgive me. He says, okay. He comes and says, Allah, this is a request, a special pledge. He wants to be forgiven. You forgive him. In reply, Allah says that I will forgive everyone except the killer of Hussein. Says that sin can never be forgiven. And says that that sin, that is the killing of Aba Abdullah, the murder of Hussein, before it was committed, he cried. The Prophet cried. Zahra cried. Amirul Mu'mineen cried. And then Prophet Musa says, who is Hussein? And there that majlis of Aza was recited for Prophet Musa. And this is something which we see and we find in our riwayat, that all of the prophets, they were informed, and this majlis of azaf for them was recited by Jibreel, and they cried. And then he says that yaqtuluhu ummatu jaddihi, that he will be killed by the nation of his father, of his grandfather. Musa, he says that his body would be crushed, he would be sliced, his house of Hawl will be arrested, taken into captivity. And whosoever assisted that killer, the same punishment is for him. And then says, O Musa, water was abandoned on the household of Hussein, will be abandoned. And then many of the small children, they will die of thirst. Many of the elder ones, they will be dehydrated. And no one to assist from Kufa, Minhal, when he goes to see Imam Sajjan alayhi salam, he says, Imam, he asks that, what news do you have from Hurmala? He says that Mukhtar, he has arrested them all. He also has been arrested. Imam says, what news? He says, he was questioned and he admitted. He says, when I came to Karbala, I brought 3 spears with me. 3 poisonous spears, which I laid them to marinate in poison for a long duration. And then he says that I shot one of them to the eyes of Abul Fadl al-Abbas. Says one of those arrows I shot into the neck of that infant of Aba Abdullah. And one of those arrows I shot into the heart of Abu Abdullah. It was mentioned yesterday that this head of Abu Abdullah, when it was taken from Karbala all the way to Sham, it was in a trunk, and then it was escorted by 50 of the men of Ibn Ziyad, La'natullah alayh. And it was such that when they took this trunk, they stopped at dusk, that is the time of Maghrib. Around the trunk, they get drunk, intoxicate themselves every night, that is every Maghrib. 50 of them. One of them, he says that I didn't get drunk on one night. And that night I see, now all the 49 persons with the trunk, they are drunk. He says that I saw the skies open and I saw the Prophet with 124,000 prophets come with him, all of them one after the other, by the trunk, and each one of them extend their condolences to Rasulullah. And I was amazed to see that sharp look of Rasulullah at me and what I saw on that day. And again, says that, again quoting from Al-Luhuf, says that one of these Malain, he was holding the curtain of Kaaba and was pleading and crying, blind he was, an old man, saying that, God, forgive me, although I know that you will not forgive me, forgive me. Another person besides him, he says that, why is that? If you want to be forgiven, no matter how many sins a person may have had committed throughout his life, Allah is all forgiving, He will forgive you. He is Arhamar Rahimeen. He says, what I have done will not be forgiven. He says, what have you done? He says, once I have a mukashifa, a dream. And I see Rasulullah in a desert with a bowl of blood in front of him. And he is upset. And I was in front of him. And then Rasulullah says that, do you know what that is? He says, that's the blood of my grandson Hussein. I have collected all of that. And then he says, Ya Rasulullah, I haven't done anything. My horse, it never served the army of Yazid. My sword, it never was used to kill anyone from Imam's side. My horse never galloped, I never did anything, nothing. I never looted, I never plundered. They went to loot the camps, I never. Rasulullah says, but you were part of that army. And then he dips his hand into the blood of Abu Abdullah, wipes it onto the eyes of this person, and he gets blinded. We recite these ziyarat when we say, Allahumma la'an awwala zalimin zalama haqqa Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad, that, O God, curse the first tyrant, the oppressor, who oppresses Muhammad and ali Muhammad. And then we say, وَآخَرَ تَابِعًا لَهُ, the last one who will continue also, curses on them. Or when we recite ziyaratul warith, we say that, la'natullah ala man zalamak, who killed you, who oppressed you, and who heard that oppression, who was part of that entity of zulm. So curses on all of them. And when it is said that, don't be part of oppression, don't be part of zulm, in a way, if God forbid we are in any way part of it, that curses that we say turn back to us. So we have to be smart, we have to be careful of what our performance is. Whatever Rasul has said to do, whatever he has said don't do, don't do. Again, when this head of Abu Abdullah is being taken from and is going towards Sham, these guys, they again, when they get intoxicated, they get drunk, and when it is by the chapel, there is a film which just came out, it's called The Green Star. Over there, this incident also has been mentioned. Says that by the chapel, by the church, the trunk was there, the head of Abu Abdullah was there, and there we see a hand appear on the wall of that chapel. What does it write? That hand writes, Atarju ummatun qatalat Husayna, shafa'ata jaddihi yawmal hisabi. A nation that has killed Hussein, do they have faith? Do they have hope that his grandfather will do shafaat for them? Will he mediate for them? فَلَا وَاللَّهِ Never by God. لَيْسَ لَهُمْ شَفِيعٌ They have no mediator. وَهُمْ يَوْمَ الْقِيَامَةِ فِي الْعَذَابِ And on the day of judgment, they are in that eternal chastisement. That is the message of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein. So long as he was alive, and so long, even today it's the same thing. وَلَا تَحْسَبَنَّ الَّذِينَ قُتِلُوا فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ أَمْوَاتًا بَلْ أَحْيَاءٌ عِنْدَ رَبِّهِمْ يُرْزَقُونَ اللَّهُمَّ ارْزُقْنَا حَيَاةَ مُحَمَّدٍ وَآلِ مُحَمَّدٍ اللَّهُمَّ ارْزُقْنَا مَمَاتَ مُحَمَّدٍ وَآلِ مُحَمَّدٍ اللَّهُمَّ ارْزُقْنَا شَفَاعَةَ مُحَمَّدٍ وَآلِ مُحَمَّدٍ اللَّهُمَّ ارْزُقْنَا فِي الدُّنْيَا زِيَارَةَ مُحَمَّدٍ وَآلِ مُحَمَّدٍ وفي الآخرة شفاعة محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد أما يجيب المضطر إذا دعاه ويكشف السوء 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 ما تمنى سنة